This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, May 2nd of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll visit Cancerland through the eyes of a local author with lived experience. As sea ice shrinks in the Arctic Ocean and shipping routes open, vessels are facing an unexpected obstacle. That story and more on This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth. This week, KGNU's award-winning science show features part one of the annual graduation special. Guests are three graduating PhD students from the different departments at the University of Colorado Boulder, and they talk about their thesis work and experience in grad school. At 9 a.m. comes another archival recording of the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, James Wise will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for the headlines with KGNU's John Callen.
Denver Public Schools has unveiled the first draft of a new school safety plan. The draft, made public last night, includes a recommendation to allow the city's middle and high schools to decide for themselves whether to have armed Denver police on their campuses. Other provisions say schools should be able to request safety protocols for new students. It also includes a discussion about weapons detection systems. The district plans to collect feedback on the first draft and release a second draft on June 1st. A final draft could be before the Board of Education for review by the end of June. The board ordered a comprehensive safety plan in March after a student shot and wounded two East High School administrators during a pat-down. Both survived, but the student who fled the building later died in an apparent suicide. Governor Jared Polis, meanwhile, has signed a flurry of new bills into law. Among them is Senate Bill 241, which creates a new state-level Office of School Safety. Signed last Friday, its purpose is to help schools prepare for and prevent emergency situations. The governor also signed SB 70. It requires school resource officers, or SROs, to complete training on how to better use Colorado's Safe to Tell services. Safe to Tell is an anonymous tip line. SROs are armed law enforcement officers assigned to schools. Schools throughout Colorado have seen record-high numbers of shootings and shooting threats during the 2022-23 school year, according to the K-12 school shooting database. That has prompted widespread calls for improved school safety. Other bills signed on Friday include four new gun safety measures. Second Amendment advocates are already challenging two of them in court. KGNU's Alyssa Palazzo has more.
Lawsuits filed by Rocky Mountain gun owners focus on Senate Bill 169 and House Bill 1219. The group said in a statement that 169, which raises the minimum age to buy a firearm to 21, violates the right of Colorado adults to buy and possess guns. They said 1219, which creates a three-day waiting period between the purchase of a firearm and its delivery, is unconstitutional. Those two bills were among four gun safety bills Governor Polis signed Friday. At signing, State Attorney General Phil Weiser told a room crowded with supporters that they represented a lot of trauma and that the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which protects the right to keep and bear arms, has been taken to a place that makes no sense. The other two gun safety bills the governor signed Friday are Senate Bill 168, which repeals a previous state law barring gun violence victims from suing firearm manufacturers and dealers, and Senate Bill 170, which expands the state's so-called red flag law. It allows district attorneys and certain educators and mental health professionals to get court orders removing access to firearms from someone considered a danger to themselves or others. Second Amendment advocates say they may also sue over those two new laws. For KGNU, I'm Alyssa Palazzo.
Immigrant advocates in Colorado are calling on the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office to stop a pilot program they say is needless surveillance of immigrants who are waiting for a day in court. The pilot ICE program unveiled last week requires immigrants awaiting a court date to wear a wrist device that tracks and surveils them. The devices reportedly track the wearer's location and can extract web browsing and search history data. The advocates say most immigrants who are due in court show up when they're supposed to, whether they have to wear a wrist device or not. They say the money spent on the surveillance program would be better spent on low-cost programs for due process and integration services. Voters will get to decide on a plan by Governor Polis and state legislators that would help ease property tax increases. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Polis' goal in the plan would be to help homeowners in Colorado by reducing the residential assessment rate and reduce the taxable value of homes. The Denver Post reports that the governor said that if Proposition HH would be approved by the voters, the average homeowner in Colorado would see their property tax increases be cut by 50%. Legislators said the proposal includes provisions to ensure protection of funding for school districts, fire districts, and county child welfare offices. They also recognize that property tax reductions cannot be considered without taking into account the effect these cuts will have on local governments. Governor Polis' Proposition HH may not be the only property tax measure on the November 2023 ballot. Advanced Colorado, the conservative fiscal nonprofit, has introduced Initiative 21. It aims to cap property tax increases at 3% per property and set aside up to $100 million in state Tabor surplus each year for fire districts. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
This is Air Quality Awareness Week. The director of Colorado's Air Pollution Control Division said air pollution can be harmful to human health, but since it's often invisible, it's important to be aware of air quality indicators like those found on many smartphone weather apps. He added that those at high risk from air pollution, like people with asthma, should take extra precautions on poor air quality days. People can sign up for air quality alerts by text by sending BetterAirCO to 21000 on their cell phones. Meanwhile, the state's Air Pollution Control Division has found high levels of pollution following a malfunction at Suncor's Plant 1 refinery in Commerce City. The malfunction happened in sulfur recovery equipment on Friday night, resulting in significant releases of sulfur dioxide, hydrogen sulfide, and other pollutants. State officials say emissions levels were dropping by early Saturday, but exposure to those pollutants could pose a threat to human health and lead to difficulty in breathing. The company on Saturday sent out 3 public alerts about the incident. There have been no reports of injury, and the incident was resolved by Saturday morning, according to the Denver Post. The company said in a statement that ensuring the safety of employees and the public is their top priority. State health officials issued similar warnings of air pollution at Suncor earlier in April. Colorado Division of Motor Vehicles offices are operating at full service today after offices shut down due to technical issues on Monday. It was the second time in 2 months the DMV was forced to shut down. Today's weather outlook, pleasant early on with mostly sunny skies and warm temperatures. A 30% chance of rain this afternoon with thunderstorms possible, mostly after 4 p.m. The high in Denver today, 73 degrees, 67 in Boulder, 71 in Fort Collins, and in Nederland expect a high temperature of 56 degrees. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Cancer is a diagnosis no one wants to be on the receiving end of, but it is a leading cause of death in this country. Sharing the experience with others going through the same life and death fight can make the journey a bit easier. Joining me in studio is local author Juliet Whitman. Her new book is called Again and Again. It's a fiction about a group of women and a child united in their cancer experience. Welcome to KGNU, Juliet.
Thank you. Sorry.
Yes, bless you. This isn't the first book you've written about cancer. Your memoir is Breast Cancer Journal. Why write a fiction this time?
It's a completely different thing. I think I'm not sure why I wrote the memoir, because it was a long time ago, but everything was very fresh and specific then. This is a whole different thing. It's a set of different people who aren't me. And I think part of the reason I wanted to write this novel was I was extremely irritated by sort of the way you remember Barbara Ehrenreich and how much she hated the pink ribbons. Me too. And the whole thing about if you're virtuous and creative and a loving person, you'll get better. And obviously, if you get worse, you're the obverse. Mm-hmm. And that's very cruel, actually. I mean, if you get better, you can thank yourself. But if you get worse, it's your own fault. So I wanted, when I was in what I called cancer land, there were a lot of surprises. And one of the things was when we got together, when the patients got together for support groups, and particularly when there wasn't a nurse or social worker guiding us and sort of wanting us to be optimistic, we went crazy. I mean, we joked, we laughed, we made fun of our caretakers, we whined about losing our hair. It was very, very alive, and sometimes very joyful and sometimes extremely ferocious. And I was sort of fascinated by that world, and I created some characters that were inhabiting it, as well as their nurse, who's one of the protagonists.
Well, and the book is very Boulder-centric. I mean, there's, of course, the landmarks and the, you know, the eccentricities that are also kind of very Boulderite. How much of the characters are based on real life?
Only in a very, yes, I think my doctor back then, who I loved and still do, although he's retired, let me go on some of his rounds with him. My surgeon actually let me watch a mastectomy. And so they're in my mind, but my doctor is not them. I also had a wonderful nurse, and one of the protagonists is a nurse, but I made her up. I don't know what my nurse's home life was like, and I don't think she was married to a Jewish lawyer from New York. But in the novel, she is. So nobody's actually the real person. You know, when you make a character in a novel, they start out a certain way. You've got an idea. Like, I had this idea that one of the central characters was Chloe. She's very young, much too young to have a terminal diagnosis. Very angry, very frightened, very beautiful, very manipulative, very narcissistic, but also capable of other things. I don't know her. And she starts off, you know, she's sort of a seed, but as you work, and it takes a couple of years to write a novel, at least takes me that, she surprises you. She takes over. She's got her own ideas about who she is. So everybody just comes out of my head.
Well, what are your words of wisdom, or just some perspectives that your own experience with cancer have given you that you think are important to share?
You know, it's so hard. I got on a Facebook group, which was for cancer patients and supporters, and I realized that by comparison with what so many people went through, even though I had a hard year with chemo and all that, what people go through is deeply upsetting. I mean, there's no way you can sort of be loving and creative and just dance your way through it. I think it's such a cliche, but what you have to do, and I think it's in the book, because I think a lot of people worry this is going to be a very depressing book, and I don't think it is. But I think one thing is you live very vigorously, very strongly when you're threatened, and you really do look up at the tree limbs against the sky and think, I never noticed how beautiful they are. And I think that's moment to moment, just loving and enjoying, oh, look, I'm sitting on the porch with a cup of coffee, or gosh, when I turn the tap on, the water comes out. I mean, I have a good life. I think if you can do that, because if you go the other way, the disease kills you before it does.
We only have about a minute left, but can you tell us about the reading that you have tonight at the Boulder Bookstore at 6:30?
Well, first, let me say they're amazing. They send out postcards. They've got a beautiful setup. They don't just give you a little bottle of water. They give you a pitcher and a pretty glass. I mean, they love books and authors, and I think David Bolduc set it up that way, and it's been true to form ever since. It's lovely to read there. When I was at the Camera, I was an editor there. I interviewed a lot of writers. They said it was one of their favorite places in the country to read. I've got an actor coming in with me. Her name is Susanna McLeod. She's wonderful. I had a sort of watcher crush on her all along, but now I got her, and she'll read a snippet, I'll read a snippet, and we want to bring some life to it, you know.
Juliet Whitman is the author of the new book, Again and Again. She'll be at the Boulder Bookstore tonight at 6:30. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
How climate change means more pirates. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Since about the middle of March, the world's average sea surface temperature has been warmer than ever in modern history, rising faster than climate forecasts and alarming scientists.
Sea surface temperatures are about 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than they were in the 1980s when satellite data became available. The explanation for this rapid heating is not clear and may be due to the end of La Niña conditions that cooled the Pacific Ocean, acting like an air conditioner.
Also, it's possible that an El Niño warming pattern is beginning, which in the past has accelerated global warming. During the most recent major El Niño in 2016, there was heavier precipitation in the southern U.S. and severe drought in Indonesia and southern Africa.
Because oceans absorb heat from burning fossil fuels, it's certain climate change is adding to the increase in sea surface temperatures. Warmer oceans can cause extreme weather, kill marine life that can't adapt, and melt polar ice caps faster. Also, because hotter water takes up more space, sea levels rise.
Scientists aren't certain that the increased ocean temperatures are short-lived or might be the beginning of a more serious situation.
As sea ice shrinks in the Arctic Ocean, shipping routes have opened, making it possible for non-ice-breaking vessels to make cheaper and faster journeys rather than going through the Panama or Suez canals.
But that could change. A new study from the Ocean University of China shows that it's becoming a lot foggier along the Arctic routes as global warming leads to more ice disappearing.
When ice melts, cold air is exposed to warm water, resulting in fog. The fog hides ice that could damage ships, so they slow down, which can add up to 3 additional days for vessels taking the Northwest Passage through the U.S. and Canada to avoid the longer Panama Canal.
Meanwhile, shipping through the Panama Canal has been reduced because of drought, and authorities have had to lessen the permitted draft of ships because of low water levels. 2 artificial lakes that feed the canal with fresh water to move vessels through the locks have suffered from a lack of rain. Of course, Panamanians have suffered from drought too, which has led to food insecurity and migration.
A deadly conflict in Sudan that started in mid-April as a power struggle between 2 generals shows no signs of slowing down. Fierce clashes in the capital, Khartoum, have created a humanitarian crisis where residents trapped in their homes rely on tenuous ceasefires to access food, water, and medicine. Those who can flee do.
The generals who once worked together following a popular uprising to overthrow longtime dictator Omar al-Bashir are now fighting each other to control the country's many resources.
One of those valuable resources is gum arabic, and it's why the conflict could bubble up in soft drinks. Gum arabic is irreplaceable in making beverages like Coke and Pepsi, and hard to substitute in numerous other products from cosmetics and paint to adhesives and pharmaceuticals.
70% of the world's gum arabic comes from Sudan, where globs of the resin are tapped from acacia trees. Given Sudan's history of ethnic warfare, companies typically keep a 3 to 6 month stockpile, But because the current violence has been in and around the capital, trade has come to a halt.
Gum arabic is so vital to the global economy that the U.S. granted it a special exemption from the trade embargo imposed during the three-decade rule of al-Bashir.
The acacia trees have been identified as crucial in helping Sudan combat climate change because they are drought-resistant, revitalize soil, and can support livelihoods.
However, fewer and fewer people want to endure the hours in extreme heat to harvest the resin, as temperatures in Sudan have increased by 1 degree Celsius in less than 3 decades, more than double the global average. And finally, pirates of yore were imagined to be one-eyed, peg-legged ruffians with parrots on their shoulders who plundered defenseless ships for loot. But modern pirates, and they do exist, aren't swashbucklers with a cutlass and a sextant. They're armed with AK-47s and GPS devices.
So who are these seafaring bandits? According to a new study, some are desperate fishermen reacting to depleted fish stocks as ocean temperatures rise with climate change.
Researchers at the University of Maryland looked at 15 years of sea surface temperature data and piracy attacks. They found that in East Africa, where fish populations had dropped and economic opportunities shrank, crimes at sea increased.
Conversely, in the South China Sea, where some commercial fish species have thrived in the warmer waters, families in the fishing industry did better and were less likely to engage in unlawful behavior.
Scientists have already correlated rising temperatures with increases in violent crime. The study is just more evidence that climate change may force some to decide. Desperate times call for desperate measures.
That's it for This Week in Water, which is sponsored today by our contributory, June Sattler of California.
June said, "If it weren't for H2O Radio, I wouldn't have followed water issues as closely, which is important as a Californian."
Thanks for listening, June, and we'll see you next week.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Yes, I'd like to comment on the Hemispheres program from last week and Hemispheres in general. I think the program last week discussing the Saudi-Iranian deal that was negotiated by China was a very positive program, and it provided a lot of very good information to the listeners. I think in general that the Middle East dialogue with Jim Nelson Hossein and Rob Prince and Ibrahim Khazarouni really is an excellent program, providing lots of insightful commentary for the KGNU and you listeners on the Middle East. Thank you very much for continuing to air this valuable program, and I think the listeners are very fortunate to have access to that.
Hi, my name is Moji Aga, and I am an Iranian-American peace, democracy, and human rights and earth activist, and I'm calling to express my concern about their one-sided nature of the Hemispheres program that was broadcast last night about the U.S. and Saudi so-called rapprochement. And I believe that if we are trying to build peace and nonviolence, I'm the founder of the Iranian Nonviolence Initiative and the Mossadegh Legacy Institute. If we are trying to build peace in that region in particular, we need to promote democracy and human rights genuinely, so that, as Dr. Mossadegh said, internal despotism and external colonialism are two sides of the same coin. Either they need one another directly as so-called friends, or worse, as enemies, when they perpetuate a conflict and sanctions and a state of Cold War, because they both benefit from it. So the way to build peace, especially in the Persian Gulf and the Middle East region, is to promote genuine democracy. And I hope that people at the Hemispheres program begin to pay genuine attention to this issue. Thank you.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. That's it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's all still ahead after these headlines from the BBC.